This podcast is for entertainment purposes only and does not replace your own financial, tax, legal, or financial product advice.
Hello, Sydney. Welcome to Mima. Okay, that's enough. Welcome, Sydney, they're a rowdy bunch. Welcome to My Millennial Money, live on tour. This is Sydney, John.
It is. Long awaited.
Long awaited Sydney. And thank you so much for being with us, Sydney. And if I can say Sydney once more, I would just get the bonus pack.
And the winner is?
And the winner is...
Now, before we get into today's episode, I want to thank our Tuesday show partner, Tal. Who is Tal? Well, Tal, T-A-L, they're Australia's leading life insurer. Tal is committed to helping more Australians understand the value of life insurance and supporting them in their time of need. Tal, insuring this Australian life. Search T-A-L online or speak to your financial advisor today about how Tal can help protect you and your family. And if you need an advisor, head to sortyourmoneyout.com, click get help, and I'll be more than happy to introduce you to somebody. Now, we are playing the recording from the Sydney live show as part of the My Millennial Money Tour, and we can't do these live events without the help of BPAY. If you're keen to get on top of your bills, choose BPAY. BPAY helps you manage your bills and keeps you in control, all from within the security of your online or mobile banking. Thanks, BPAY. I use BPAY regularly. They're in my corner. They're in your corner. Check the product disclosure statement before using any financial product. Now I'm going to throw back to the live recording from the other night. We'll start with Alicia. We had a great night and I just encourage you to continue on being focused with your money. Continue on having a goal. Continue on turning off all the noise and focusing on what matters to you and your situation most with your money. That's right, your money. Tell everyone else to bugger off. This is your money. I don't know why I'm going on a rant, but I will for this intro. So many times we get told that we have to do things. We have to do this with our money. We should do this. We should do that. I might be guilty of it. Who cares what anyone else thinks? If you've got a goal in your financial life and if it is important to you, nothing else matters. And in fact, there will be some questions answered in this live episode about some of the pressure that we get from our family, good and bad. You are in the driver's seat. Nothing else matters. Your goals, your life, your money, your loved ones, whatever that thing is for you. I'll hand it over. I'm ranting. Thanks so much. I'll see you guys soon.
We've got Alicia, who is a friend of the podcast, a listener of the podcast, and she's going to read the acknowledgement tonight.
We acknowledge the Gundagai peoples of the Eora Nation, traditional custodians of the land of which we stand, and pay respects of their elders past and present. We extend that respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples who are with us tonight.
Awesome. Thank you very much. Give her a hand, everyone.
Welcome, Alicia.
Okay, we're going to start with Shelley Johnson tonight. And don't worry, John, it's not on your list. Shelley, can you come up and just give us a quick rundown? Shelley is from My Millennial Career. And there's this whole thing that we see in the media at the moment and on the news and on all that stuff, the great resignation. What is the great resignation and should I care?
Well, I don't know. You're retired, so should you care? Maybe not. But for the rest of us, we should care about the Great Resignation. Now, some people will say it's a myth, but the recruiters in the room may tell us otherwise. So the Great Resignation is what Microsoft and McKinsey are predicting will happen, which is that around 40% of people will start looking for new work or consider resigning from their jobs in the new year.
And what brought this on?
I think it's before COVID and after COVID, right? Like, we're seeing higher rates of burnout. Who actually, can we ask, and we know our listeners can't see it, but in this room, who is thinking about a job change right now? Okay. I reckon that's about 40%.
Yeah, keep your hand up just so I can see. Yeah, Nate's hands down, Jess's hands down.
Keep your hand up if you'd like a job working with Glenn or John.
Does anyone want to be a buyer's agent? Put your hand up.
Buyer's agents.
Okay, yeah, okay. There's a few there.
So we've got about 40% of people in the room considering their job. If you hate your job, then you know, now's a good time to start thinking about it because it's a candidate's market. It's a job seeker's market. And this is what we want. We want to have the pick of the options when it comes to our career.
So, Shel, can I ask a question?
Yes.
40% is a lot.
Yes.
Where has it come from? Has it always been high? Because I speak to every second person and they want to change their job or they don't like their job. Is 40 naturally high?
So on average, turnover will sit around 15%. So staff leaving their jobs will sit about 15%.
Right.
And what we saw during COVID in 2020, it was about 7% turnover. So there was a drop and I think we're recovering that now and we're also going to see an increase because people are moving location, they're moving regionally, they're going elsewhere, and they just want to opt out of their boring job that they hate.
Okay. So Microsoft are going to be right again, are they?
Don't know. We'll see.
They got some good marketing out of it.
It's a bit of marketing, but we're seeing an increase for sure already in recruitment.
Awesome. And you can listen to My Millennial Career wherever you're listening to this podcast. Give her a round of applause, everyone. Thanks, Shel. So they've got a bonus episode dropping about the Great Resignation. Don't know when, but it's happening. When is it happening?
2 weeks.
2 weeks. Cool. So, Nafil, you've got a question. What's your question tonight?
So my question is, we always hear that past performance isn't indicative of future performance. If that's really the case, what role do financial advisors play other than introducing us to different financial mechanisms?
Awesome. So thank you, Nafil. If you want to grab a bottle of wine on your way down, you can drink that in your seat or take it home for another time. Whoa.
Looks like you don't need it. Maybe put that back, buddy. Yeah. It's a bit of Mountain Dew out there.
So I wanted to talk about this. And for those in the room, we did talk about this offline before we recorded around this notion of, you know, if I can just go and buy an ETF that has a long-term track record that's invested in the markets, I don't need a bloody financial advisor. Like, what do I need that for if the investment's just doing its thing? Hold that thought for a second. John, why do I need a coach in general?
Look, the number one reason why you'd need a coach is to have someone looking in from the outside without any emotion, ego, whatever, and they're just looking at it with logic.
Because I can buy a house everywhere. There's homes and houses on every corner. Like, why would I need to get your help if I can just go buy a house?
Well, you can if you've got the skills and resources and the time, but a lot of people haven't.
Yeah, and that's the notion. When we engage professionals, like, you don't need a financial advisor for the rest of your life if you don't want. You might only need one for a certain period of time, for a certain task. In the money world, it's not just about let's pick a good performing fund and pump money into it, because once we start to amass wealth, there's other things that come into play. We've got to look at tax planning. We've got to look at estate planning. We have to look at how do we draw it down in an efficient way. So I did want to include that question. Does that answer or help answer your question? Yeah. So it's not just about, oh, show me an investment. It's not I need the Wolf of Wall Street to pick and trade shares for me. It is about that relationship, that third party accountability, and to really help you with your goals. And I know when, and John's probably had it before, if you get a couple in the room, it's sometimes handy just to have a third person just to be the voice of reason sometimes. And sometimes in a relationship, one partner might steamroll the other one, and a few of you are like nudging the person next to you, one partner might steamroll the other one, and that's always not always the case when you are in the room with a third party. So
in saying that, with past performance, it's not a bad starting point though, is it? Like, to have a look at something that's got history as opposed to something that's 12 months old.
Exactly.
Kath O'Neill.
Kath O'Neill, come on down. You've won a new question.
So maybe for context, so hypothetical, you want to buy a house in Sydney earlier this year, you're looking at property prices and suddenly you realise, you know, say you have a budget, hypothetically, $1 million because you're in Sydney, yay, And then you see property prices going up and up and up, and you realise, actually, I can't afford a house anymore. Maybe I should look at apartments. Maybe I should look at townhouses. How do you readjust what your budget should be from a million, because you don't want to be pushing your budget for just an apartment that has less growth potential?
Okay, so you're saying you've still got that million. It won't get you the house, but it'll get you the apartment instead in the same location.
But you don't want to spend $1 million on an apartment because it's just an apartment.
Yeah. Okay, so by you saying it's just an apartment probably tells me you don't want it in the first place. But you're just buying it because that's all you've got left.
You want somewhere to live that you own that will go up in value because you own it potentially, but an apartment maybe won't go up in value as much as a house, but you want to get into the market. But you don't want to push your budget.
Yeah, okay. So if you think you're going to buy an asset that won't go up in value, you've probably got to question whether you buy it or not. Is that fair?
Yeah.
So I would look at historical performance and say, well, in the last 10 years in that suburb, what has house price done? What has unit price done? And get a bit of a gauge on that and look at the supply and demand, the vacancy rates of units and apartments in that suburb. And then you may come to the conclusion that, hang on a minute, I'm not buying there. Do I still want to live in my own home, or do I want to rent vest, or do I need to go further out and buy that good asset like that house you're looking at?
Yeah.
Does that help, Kath?
I mean, that makes sense. I mean, what we're doing is not buying anything because it's all...
Yeah. So you just made the question up.
I wrote this question in May 2021.
Yeah, yeah. That was a question from May 2021.
Yeah. But, it's a good one. So you're actually sitting on your hands. Yep. Okay.
So what does, like, and this is the whole thing, like, Sydney is now just an international city like London, right? Like, it's, a lot of people don't own homes in London. It's just, you rent, right? So the whole thing is, how do we invest our money for the you of tomorrow, today, in an efficient way that we can still have a lifestyle in the place that we want to live?
Yes, that's right. And I think the thing there, and I was talking with the grandfather of campfires over the break, Vince Scully, and we're talking about how interest rates aren't going to stay low forever. And if they do go up, which they will, how are we positioned with our cash flow? And usually if the roof over our head is the last thing we let go. So our lifestyle goes first, doesn't it? But now we're miserable and we're in a house that we potentially might not be able to afford. So we want to avoid all of that on the way in, not getting in the trenches and then realising we haven't got a gun.
Love it. Who would like, you mentioned the godfather of campfire chats, who would like Vince to come up on the stage to say hi? Give him a hand. Come on, Vince. So, Vince Scully.
Do you want me to read a question?
No, I want you to answer one.
Without the marshmallows. Oh, dear.
So, Ben, welcome to the stage, Ben. Ben's just come up and he's going to read his question. Ben, could you read your question right there?
I can. What now? When you're on the right path, how do you keep motivated to keep achieving the goal? E.g., I've sought financial advice and I'm on the right path, but what now?
What now? That's the interesting difference.
Thanks,
between...
Ben. Give him a hand, everyone.
Thanks, Ben.
I think that's the difference between goals and habits, that the goal is the thing that gets you going and the habit is the thing that keeps you going. And we form these habits as we go towards our goals. So if you've got a goal to buy a home in 3 years' time, which is sort of pretty typical for the people who come in my door, and it takes a lot of work to go from in debt, no budget, to home deposit. But the discipline that you pick up in that time and what you learn from your advisor in that time is what gets you to the next step, which is now paying down the debt, investing, starting a business, whatever. So I think it's about habits. Anyone ever read Atomic Habits by, what's his name, Clear?
James Clear.
James Clear. That's the point that he makes, that goals can be great at getting you going, but the temptation is once you get there, you feel like, well, that's it. Now what do I do? And that's why goals, when you set your goal, you've got to be able to answer, in my mind, you've got to answer three questions. When I achieve this goal, I will be, insert. When I achieve this goal, I will do. And when I achieve this goal, I will feel. If you can't answer those three questions, it's not an emotionally resonant goal. And you will have that sense of, is that it? When I get there.
Awesome. Thanks, but it's the funny thing, like, and this is where I'm all about living, baby. It's all well and good to work to stuff, but you can enjoy your life as well once you've met a goal. Like, you're allowed to say, oh, I've worked so hard at paying the debt off. I've worked so hard at getting into our first home. Now, what do we do? Well, what about that $300 a month that you were saving to get in there?
That's a lot of latte.
Yeah, spend an extra $100 a month on inviting people over for dinner and enjoying the moment. Like, I just don't believe it's always foot down to the floor.
That's right.
Live life. Don't do dumb things 25/8, and we all do, but it's okay to be strategic, meet a goal, have some fun, enjoy life, come up for air and think, okay, what do I want to do next? Ben's question about what next, who knows? Ben might not know for another 6 months or another year. But if you can keep just saving money, enjoying life, he might.
And spending some of it.
And spending some money. John, do you have any comments on that?
No. I reiterate those words exactly. I think there doesn't always have to be a what now. Mm. Yeah. And maybe some pressure from external sources is asking ourselves to create a what now, right? Just come within and see what's important to you right now.
Did anyone have any questions on the fly for Vincent Scully?
Wow, the only other person who calls me Vincent is my mother, and she's That's been right. dead for 40 years.
And I'm far from dead, Vince. Okay, up next, we've got Millie, who's going to ask Vince and John a question.
Okay, it's about property. So I live in Newcastle and not in a position to buy at all right now, but I think there's a feeling of particularly, you know, that whole situation of people moving regionally and the prices are going up. I feel a lot of pressure to kind of get in the market and jump in. I'm not in a position to buy right now, but I guess what would your advice be on how to navigate that, not making silly decisions, but preparing and anticipating what is potentially going to happen in the market and whether it's a good idea to kind of get in as soon as possible or ride it out or, yeah.
Thank you, Millie.
Thanks,
her a
Millie.
Hand, everyone.
Vince, do you want me to attack this? Or
you go first.
All right.
You're
okay.
The property man.
So, Millie, good question. It's a common one, isn't it? The first thing I would say is a lot of pressure to get into the market. Where's that pressure coming from? Is it external? People telling you that they've just bought and that's creating that own internal pressure. So you've got to get that pressure off your back. And in conjunction with that, we're doing what we can do in our control. So if we haven't got a deposit yet, we shouldn't be losing sleep over that. So, and then going back to those goals and habits of, well, how much do we need as a deposit? Is it 10%? Is it 5%? Parental guarantor, whatever. How much do we need? Set our sights on that, give ourselves a time frame. And then at that stage, we can monitor the market for what it is. Don't jump on realestate.com today when we're 6 months away from buying. And we'll keep that external pressure and internal pressure away by just concentrating on the habits that are in your control. Yeah.
And I think the one point I would add to that is that if you're talking about your own home as opposed to investment, we've really got to stop thinking about this as an investment. It's really about fixing your rent for the rest of your life. And if you treat it as an investment, you're more likely to buy more house. If you actually focus on this as it's actually consumption, I'm consuming somewhere to live, and my choice is, do I rent or do I buy? It's not a, do I buy shares or do I property? Do I invest or do I rent? It's a, do I buy or do I rent? And that's really about not buying the right amount of house at the right time. And you know, just stop thinking about it as an investment. It will generally make you money over enough time, but that's not what it's about.
Vince, but go doesn't ahead. Property always go up in value?
Well, I was just showing John a tweet from today where this guy bought a, let me remember the story, it's a one-bedroom unit.
Not pointing at me.
No, not pointing, it wasn't you. I was pointing this out to John because it was evidence that if the guy who bought this house had paid John the money, he probably could have saved him 10 times John's fee. But the story was the guy bought this apartment, one-bedroom apartment in Auburn, not very far from here, in 2017 for $480,000. It's on the market today at $449,000.
So we spoke about...
In the biggest boom in Sydney's history.
The last 4 years have doubled in most markets in Sydney, haven't they? So that's an indication of asset type, not just buying anything and hoping it goes up.
Yeah. And it's not an isolated incident.
Is there anyone brave enough to share maybe when they've done something because of the pressure that other people have put on them? And if that's you, come on down and share. And I don't want to put everyone on the spot. I just like to make this all encouraging. And
I've got one.
Yeah.
I was driving to Sydney today. My wife told me to get off and take that right exit. And I didn't want to do it, but I did it anyway to keep the family happy. And it cost me an extra 15 minutes to get here. Right?
And I hope you didn't say, I told you, dear.
No, that would have been a bad move.
Hey, oh, we've got another. Come on down. Do you want another bottle of wine? He's already finished it. Okay. Nafal?
Sorry. Nafal.
Nothing.
I'm back. So one time I had pressure put on me was around 2016 when crypto was like the new craze. Everyone was talking about it. You can see two videos on YouTube that weren't about cryptocurrency. And so I decided that, hey, I'm just going to put whatever money I had at the time into it. Thankfully, it did work out. But at the same time, it's an intangible asset right now. You can't exactly buy anything useful with it. I can't go down to Woolies and use that money. And yeah, it's just something I was pressured into. I didn't believe in it, and I kind of still don't. But yeah, that's my story.
A good story and well told. All right, give me a minute. And that's it. Like, yeah, come on down if you got it. Is it Tennille? Yeah. Why? And just while you're thinking of your point, just on this crypto thing, we've got to take a cold shower because I don't believe...
Can you use Bitcoin to take a shower?
We've got to take a cold shower because I don't believe when people say investing in crypto, I don't believe it's an investment because I don't invest in different foreign currencies. So why would I don't invest into crypto? I've got a small holding of cryptocurrencies, under 2% of my net worth, but it's a speculation play. I'm interested in being involved. So when all you people ask me questions, I know what DeFi means, I know what stake means, I know all the words, but I'm not investing. And if you wouldn't buy US dollars or euros, you, as a strategy, maybe cryptocurrency isn't for you. It is a currency. The upside is the institutional wealth that might be moving into some of these coins, namely probably the top five, probably just Bitcoin really at the moment. However, I think a rising tide will lift all the boats. So if you do have a small exposure over the next 10 years, sure, you might get a rising tide. If you're buying coins, DeFi, off projects that are just no one's ever heard of. I mean, when I was experimenting a couple of weeks ago, I put $100 into this DeFi thing because I wanted to just to learn more about it. Went to the website, you pay the $100 of BUSD or whatever the coin was into their contract. They would then send you the coins back and they airdrop you bonus coins. The website's not up anymore. there was someone's house in Estonia, like in their garage, like, so it's all just wild. There's two sides of this crypto coin, don't excuse the pun. One side is society, the technology, it is happening, it is the future. And then there's this other side where it's all a punt, it doesn't mean anything, it's all speculation, it's a Ponzi scheme. So you just have to be very, very aware that just because you made it the pub is saying, yeah, I got in at Solana at, you know, whatever the thing was, whatever, is it part of your strategy? Are you trying to save for a home? Are you trying to get out of debt? Or are you trying to dick around and try and make a quick $300 by putting $100 in some fraud DeFi currency that I've lost? So it's just cold shower, everyone.
Oh, I closed my TAB account and moved it all to crypto.
Oh, well, there you go. Well, in the book, in the graph, if you've seen it, I've got like the risk profile and it's like equities, property, all that stuff. And then at the very top, it's like roulette, crypto, lottery tickets. It's in that same thing. So, all right, Tennille, you've got a question.
I just wanted to make a comment about pressure. I actually find it a positive thing. So not to disagree with you too much, Glenn, but I use pressure to deliberately make myself focused. I'm the last person in my immediate family to buy property. And if I didn't have the pressure from my mom telling me prices are going up every 5 seconds, it probably wouldn't have started me thinking about the journey of buying a home. My sister has built a house. My brother has built a house. My dad has property as well. So I use the pressure. I mean, they're family, so they're good about it, but they do talk about it. And it's helped me to focus on that as a goal. So I deliberately use pressure by listening to podcasts and just being generally aware of things. And that's really helped me to focus. So.
Awesome.
Awesome. I like that. That's good.
Yeah.
And I get, yeah, give her a hand. And I think that's, I think we categorically know if it's good, healthy pressure, which might be in Tennille's case, or in Millie's life, this, oh, you just need to do it. Like, I don't know. Choose your pressure.
And be careful of taking property advice from your parents, especially when they're my age, because we all remember the 80s when inflation was 17%. So you might have paid a bit too much for the house today, but in 3 years' time, your pay would have doubled. So it doesn't matter. Today, it does matter.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be back right after this.
If you're after personal financial advice, don't get it from a podcast. If you would like help based on your own personal situation, head over to sortyourmoneyout.com. Click Get Help and we'd be happy to introduce you to one of our trusted advisors. Our panel of advisors, mortgage brokers and accountants work with clients all over Australia so they can connect with you wherever you are. That's sortyourmoneyout.com and click Get Help.
All right, guys, let's get on to the next question. And it's from Jess Smalley. Do you want to come down, Jess, and read your question? Now, just while Jess is coming to the stage, give her a hand. Jess, we met Jess this week, and Jess works with Mark Boris's team. And
yeah, who listens to the mentor here? Oh, that's him. Oh, yes. Do you hear my voice at the very end? Yes. That's so good.
Yeah, so Jess produces a podcast called The Mentor with Mark Boris. He's a really rich guy who did a lot in life and really encouraging.
Employs me.
Yeah, employs Jess. So I just thought we'll let Jess read a question. And we don't get this kind of question much on the podcast. Huh. So if you want to...
It's so funny because I don't actually remember asking this.
Well, May, it was a long time ago.
What has been the biggest challenge building and monetizing my millennial money?
Ooh, that's a good question. Grab a glass of wine or a bottle.
I think there's two things, the building and the monetizing bit.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. The hardest part about building and monetizing M3. So it was a little bit easier for me to build what we've built because I came out of my last career and I effectively was self-funded. So, you know, for the last maybe just almost, probably, I will just call it 2-point-something years, I didn't draw an income from anything. So I had my own savings and then I was just burning cash. And that speaks a lot to risk profile, like to have the stomach to have a pile of money in your account, not have a job and see your hard worked capital depleting by a car, depleting by a boat, depleting, I'll swap that car, depleting. So our strategy was a little bit different and I wanted to be strategic in a couple of ways. One, I don't believe there's anything worse than the stench of desperation. And I mean, we didn't really pump heaps of ads on the podcast because I had the view that I didn't want to spam our audience and get paid $20 to, you know, run an ad for some company. So I'm like, stuff your ads. I don't want the small amount of money to spam the audience. So the hardest part building it was, what do you reckon, John? It was all hard.
Well, I think it's more so for you rather than me because I was just turning up and talking and going home again. Well, I still am. I came half an hour early tonight.
Yeah, that's right.
Would have been 45 foot. Didn't take the wrong turn. And you mentioned it. It's the slow bleed and not taking those little wins along the way or perceived wins and knowing that it's the bigger picture and not selling yourself short too early. So now you're in a power position where companies can come to you, but a lot of businesses sell themselves short too early, as you mentioned that word, desperation. So I suppose the message there is you've got to be patient enough to play the long game.
And I'll tell everyone a wild story, and I haven't even told JP this. You may have heard at the start of this episode our show partner, Tao. So they're a big national Australian company that's a quality company, and when we do business deals with the podcast, I'm a bit of an annoying freak. I'll go to the meeting and I'll ask questions that make no sense at surface level, but to me it says a lot. So the team that I'm dealing with at Tao, one of the first questions was, hi, how long have you been at Tao? She's like, 8 years. And then the other guy, how long have you been at Tao? Oh, this is my 9th year. Instantly, I know that the culture must be good in that organisation to retain quality people for the long term. So if I'm in business and I want to have a partnership like that, I knew that they were a quality company. Now, earlier this week, Jess and I had a catch-up breakfast with Tao, first time we could because of COVID, and we just shared that, you know, I was thankful that they partnered with us because I'm all about long-term partnerships, not transactions. And I didn't tell Jess this, but Jess, that cafe, and if you're into spooky, weird things that gives you goosebumps, that cafe that we had breakfast in August 2018, so we started in April 2018, in August 2018, I had a meeting in that cafe with another big national company to try and get them to partner with M3. And the biggest challenge that we've had is companies can't understand how podcasts work, so they don't want to invest the money. So that's been a challenge. Basically, I presented My Millennial Money in that exact cafe almost 3.5 years ago, and I just thought it was weird. It's like, oh my gosh, I'm back at this exact cafe that I was with the company who's actually decided to invest with us and take a risk. Like, so that was the biggest challenge. Thank you. So the biggest challenge was understanding or showing people about podcasts and that everyone in this room are quality people and I don't want to spam people. I just want a good quality partner to connect with us. Sure, they've got an insurance product, but we don't do any performance-based marketing or anything like that. They just pay a flat fee, and that's kind of been the challenge, getting people to understand. In monetizing it, yeah, like it has been a slow burn, And at the start of this year, I only started paying myself a salary out of the business. So we're still here. Oh, sorry, Shell's got a question.
So you mentioned that there's, you saw your income depleting or your savings depleting. For people like us where they've, you know, you've got your emergency fund and maybe you've got your property kind of underway or whatever, how do you start to build up your risk tolerance when you're in the position now, you've got a few things set up to take a few risks like I suppose you all have with setting up your own businesses?
Yeah, I think for risk tolerance, and we can all use this in our own life, I might get Vince and John to talk about it in their own lives. I think the older I get, the more I've realised that, okay, the worst thing that could happen is I go broke and I've got to go get a job. So it was this like mind game that I had to get over. And then I was like, no, that's not the worst thing that could happen. The worst thing that could happen, someone could kick down my door at night and murder me. So taking the risk isn't a big deal. Has anyone heard my recurring dream about me waking up not feeding the dog that I don't own? So every... Ainsley, I'm nuts.
Are we going to get Schmacko on as a sponsor?
Schmacko. So every time before I go to sleep now, and it's probably the medication I'm on, I kid you not, every time before I go to sleep, I say, I fed the dog.
I don't know if that's suitable for work.
But the problem was, now, I woke up the other night, I haven't closed the back door.
Because the dog was still out?
So,
he was
I don't
with
know,
the cat.
I think it's, I don't know what I was saying there.
Come on, Rover. Get
we're talking about risk tolerance.
Yeah, so it's, I don't even know. So, Vince, and apologies to if you're in Perth going to work and this means nothing to you right now, but thanks for still listening, I guess. Yeah, Vince, risk tolerance and how do we ratchet that up?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a few things here. There's about risk tolerance, risk capacity and the ability to recover. So having a ton of money in the bank gives you a lot of capacity to take risk, but you may not feel very comfortable with it. And then you've got to look at the what's my plan B? How do I recover that if this does all go to shit? And sometimes those plans don't work out. When I started my previous business, when I left Macquarie, my plan B was always, I can always go back to investment banking. But actually, when I closed the business down, the GFC had come and all of my mates in investment banking no longer had a job. So, yeah, it doesn't always work out. But as you get older, you either get less or more tolerant. In my 20s, I was very risk tolerant.
Risque?
Very risque. And 1987 made me realise, actually, maybe that's not that good an idea. And I have been relatively conservative since, despite starting two businesses. But I would feel myself to be a relatively conservative person when it comes to finances.
I think as well, a lot of it was, having a chunk of money allowed me to actually sleep at night in the short term.
Yeah.
Like, because it's like, all right, I can... There's still that guilt. Like, you literally don't have a job. And but, I had employed three people or something like that and still not earning an income. And I'm like, all right. But in my gut, I really knew that I was onto something. Yeah. So what we did when we first started, you just always look for trends. And our whole metric in the first year of starting the podcast was we just are after signs of life. Because if there's signs of life in my garden, I'll keep watering it. I'll keep doing it. I just want signs of life because good, healthy things should be growing so I could double down onto that. And some of it was my personality. I saw a gap in the market. There was no other real mainstream Aussie personal finance podcasts. I drove a truck through that. You know, I spent close to $100,000 in the first year on Instagram ads because I'm like, I want... our audience to grow. It was the first time I kind of only spent money on the podcast, on advertising, was the first year because I wanted to get us to a critical mass as fast as possible. So that's why I did use a little bit of, and I probably wasted, for the Instagram marketers in the room, I probably wasted half of that money not knowing what I was doing. But I was just after signs of life, momentum, and then, yeah, so John, risk tolerance and profile, how have you done that in your life in any area?
Yeah, I think you're right, Vince. As you get older, I think your risk profile reduces, and it's like you don't stay safe, but... Who's got a family in the room or kids or, yep, you got someone else that you're maybe looking after, and I think you're always a little bit more cautious when you've got a family to look after. And now some people's personality might go the other way and say, well, because I've got to look after them, I'm going to go harder. But I think I've come the other way. But I think in my 20s and 30s and, it, for me, it was work ethic and passion, doing something that you're passionate about and having the work ethic to make sure that you're going to get a result no matter what. Now, if you're not passionate about it, it's very hard. You can work as hard as you want, but then in the end, you're going to get sick of it. But if you're passionate about it and you've got the work ethic, I think it's pretty hard to go wrong.
It is.
Yeah, because if I wasn't passionate about the podcast, I would have given up 6 months in, because I'm like, well, this isn't viable. I don't have any money coming through. So, I really had to know that there was no turning back and it was all or nothing. And we've got a quick question. Jasmine, thanks for coming up. Sorry to keep you.
That's okay. So I know there's a bunch of different demographics in the room in terms of age. I'm 20. I'm just at that age where I'm actually starting to consider money and the future. Where do you start? Like, what would you suggest investing in? Like, property, shares? What first, do you think?
Well...
property. Next question.
How long have you listened to the podcast, if at all?
I only started listening to it very recently.
Yeah, awesome. Have you got a copy of my book? No. You do now, because there's one left. So this book... I actually wrote this book for Jasmine. It's the Where Do I Start? And we're going to start at foundations. We're going to start, I want you to start in chapter 2. The chapter's called Get Rich and Make It Rain. It's all about mindset. So I want you to start with your just understanding mindset. Just like, what are you all about? What are you doing?
Jasmine, I think it's fantastic that you're 20 and you're coming out and dedicating a Friday night to something like this.
Give her a hand, everyone. Yeah. Do you drink red wine?
No.
Okay.
So she doesn't drink. She's interested in increasing her wealth. Like,
not red wine.
Oh, you do drink.
I'm going to get you a bottle before you...
Can I answer a question? Because it's probably not the answer you're expecting. Is that the first thing I think you should invest in is yourself. And that most people at 18, 19, 20, 21 are probably best spent investing in themselves, which is about an education, which is about building the foundation for a career. And then the next thing to focus on is spending less than you earn. Get those two right and you're on your way.
So we're out of time, but this is what we're going to do, Jasmine. I want you to read the book. And then if you're comfortable, email the team. Oh, here we go. Here's a bottle of white wine. There we go. And it's a 2021, so it's vintage.
Well, at least it's fresh.
Broken wood. It's broke.
Crypto wine.
Broken wood, cricket pitch. I'll offer, if you want to read the book, highlight any things you have questions on. And if you want, we'll spend some time on the phone or whatever. And we can, I'll record it because I always need content. and we can go through it.
Okay.
Would that help?
Yes.
Yeah. So give her a hand because we're going to wrap up. Thanks, Jasmine.
Can we give Jasmine Shoes a round of applause? They're just outstanding. Well done.
Love it. So we'll make sure Jess gets your details. So when you write in or whatever, if you want to, that we remember that I said this. Thanks. Okay, thank you, Sydney, so much for hanging out with us. Thanks, Vince. Thanks, John. And we'll see you guys
soon.
Thanks,
guys.
All right, bye.
We acknowledge the Darkin Young people, traditional custodians of the land on which our studio sits, and pay respect to their elders, past and present. We extend that respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples who may listen to our podcast.
My Millennial Money supports A21, a charity focused on abolishing slavery and human trafficking all over the world. Check out a21.org.au for more info. If you would like some other giving options, or if you're unsure about which charity you can support, head to thelifeyoucansave.org.au.
This podcast is for education and entertainment purposes. Any advice is general financial advice only, which does not take into account your objectives, financial situation, or needs. Because of that, you should consider if the advice is appropriate to you and your needs before acting on the information. If you do choose to buy a financial product, read the product disclosure statement and obtain appropriate financial advice tailored to your needs. Symo Interactive Proprietary Limited, the publisher of the podcast, is an authorised representative of Money Sherpa Proprietary Limited, which holds financial services license 451289.